You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
Investigating interactions with our surroundings and society.
Every week we discuss our experience with these interactions, how they emerge, and the impacts of these invisible forces. Hey, this is Double Space.
With Kat
and Tintin.
And we're going to talk about space, society, and what it means to be walking around on this earth the way we do.
Hello, and we are broadcasting on 101.9 FM in Vancouver, UBC, on the unceded Coast Salish lands of the Musqueam people.
Hi, this is Kat Cott.
And this is Tintin Yang.
And you're listening to Double Space. This is a show where we're going to be talking about how we explore our surroundings and how we perceive them.
Mm-hmm. And how we create our surroundings and just an investigation on space, however we decide to interpret that each week.
Yeah.
Kat, we were talking a little while ago about the ultimate space that is the most relevant to us, which is, I suppose, our country.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Our land.
Yes, our land. And
well.
Yes. And
our quotation marks.
Yeah, of course. So we were talking about patriotism and nationalism and, I don't know, our relationships with the concepts of being associated as, you know, residents or citizens of a certain country, just given that we occupy that space. Yeah, and how, like, I don't know, I was just talking about how, like, absurd I find nationalism sometimes, and the fervor and, like, energy behind it, I just generally, I don't know, I'm, like, skeptical of. And this year is, like, Canada 150, like, the 150th, year of Canada. I'm doing air quotes right now.
It's
existing.
It's pretty cringy.
Definitely.
I mean, the idea of patriotism, especially like in this day and age, is so strange because it's like just because you happen to be next to someone, you're united to them in a way, just because of where you are in space. Like the fact that your home happens to be near someone, suddenly you share this like all-encompassing factor with them that you live in the same area.
And like you have this shared cultural and identity and like understanding just based on the fact that, you know, you happen to have lived in the same, you know, block or whatever. Even like in theory, I would have you'd share like a similar cultural identity as someone who like lived in, you know, like Nova Scotia or something, just based on the fact that we're both Canadian.
Yeah. I like, part of me thinks like in the abstract, this is like so odd that just being in one space unites someone. But I was kind of thinking about it, and I guess it makes more sense than I kind of give it credit for initially, because when you do live in one space, like, you share an environment, you know? Like, you have the same weather, and you kind of see the same houses all around you, and you probably know your neighbors, and they probably know your neighbors, too. And so there's kind of this, like, shared common ground, at least.
Mm-hmm. I guess, like, sometimes for me, it's just, like, the assumption that you have, like, these shared values based on those kinds of things. You know what I mean? Like, I'm sure the, you know, recent election is a great example of how you can, you know, be technically in the same space as somebody else, but then have, like, a very divided opinion of what you see as the correct leadership for a country.
Yeah, and I think that that's where patriotism gets kind of iffy and a little less, like, wholesome.
Wholesome.
Because, like, I don't know, people just assume like, oh, this is someone who is part of my, you know, patriotism, part of my country, and this other person that I've decided is not part of it. And that exclusion is troubling in general. I think that's where borders get troubling, is when there's exclusion.
Definitely. I mean, there's a lot more that goes into the politics of like borders and stuff that I don't know enough about, so I don't want to talk about. And also, it's getting really spicy and political suddenly. this is not a politics show, that being said.
Oh, I don't know. I was always ready to go.
We're still working on it. Yeah.
I think it is in nature so political a concept. Even, it's so funny, like, even speaking abstract, like, it's still so political.
Yeah.
But anyway, stick around, and we will continue talking about spaces on Double Space on CITR 101.9 FM.
Oh, lousy smarch weather.
This issue of Discorder, there's no more Discorder. Discorder is over. Vancouver housing crisis, commercial plates, lucky plugs, Richmond underwater. There's no more Discorder ever. 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 Discorder ever.
Spring is here. This April, pick up an issue of Discorder from a local venue or record store for articles on Sumac, Snit, Sara Devachi, Record Store Day, and more. Special thanks to this month's advertisers, Levitation Fest, Rickshaw Theater, Light Organ Records, Beat Merchant, Red Cat Records, Neptune Records, Horses Records, Audiopile Records, Dandelion Emporium, High Life Records, Vinyl Records, Live Van, and AMS Events.
April makes fools of us all.
Hello, we're back on Double Space with me, Kat Cott, and Tintin.
Hello. So, another thing that we talked about earlier when we were discussing the show was actually the concept of getting back to the idea of patriotism that we were discussing earlier, but the concept of the Olympics, actually, it began because I went on a crazy tangent about transit. Unrelated, but we will talk about that in another episode, probably. I have a lot of feelings about transit.
She does.
I really do. But the Olympics, okay. So, as we were discussing patriotism earlier, I kind of thought that, like, the Olympics is one of the most, I guess, like, garish, if that is the right word, examples of patriotism that we have, like, in modern, I don't know, like, in, like, 2017 today, or I guess, like, 2016 last year was the real Olympics. Yeah, and, like, I guess the way that I feel about the Olympics is that, I mean, as growing up, it was a really exciting event, especially, like, having the Olympics held in Canada when I was, like, 12 years old, or, like, not 12, 13 or 14. In Vancouver. It was super exciting, and to see, like, you know, Vancouver on, like, the world stage, and, like, everyone's paying attention to Canada and all that stuff, but, of course, it came with some really nasty side effects, such as, like, you know, displacing homeless populations in, you know, the downtown east side in Gastown, just so that when, you know, tourists come around, they can see a nice, clean, you know, a nice, clean city, pretty much, is what I would say.
Yeah, like a perfect, quote, perfect city with no problems.
Yeah, definitely.
Just to really, like, idealize and fetishize Vancouver. Just right there for you.
Totally, totally. So, like, I don't know, the Olympics, and also, like, just the recent controversies that have been surrounding, like, every single Olympic event that's happened pretty much since, like, probably even after, you know, the Olympics in Vancouver in 2010. Like, what was going on in, like, Sochi in Russia, how, like, you know, the facilities were pretty awful, and the how much it cost too, and same with the Rio Olympics, it was the same kind of situation. Yeah, I don't know, I just wonder, like, why we continue to do these things, because obviously it's not just a celebration of, like, athleticism. I feel like while that is part of it, and it's definitely something that shouldn't be, like, underscored, it's like, or not underscored, undercut, I guess, because, like, there definitely needs to be an occasion where people can celebrate, like, their athletic achievements, but it's pretty much, like, it seems to just be like a country like pissing contest.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing like it. There's nothing like the Olympics where it's like under the guise of a very positive event of positively like celebrating your country and having all these countries come together. And there really isn't much like that, especially like such a public display. Like, I suppose there's the UN, but that's not a celebration.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, like there were things called like expos, and I don't know if they're still on. I got to research this more. I really just, I'm flying off the hinges, but
I don't think so.
There aren't any expos anymore?
There used to be the World's Fair. America. That's not a thing.
Not a thing anymore?
Yeah, I remember because it was in like this Simpsons joke. Oh, and I was like, Mom, like, why is this a joke? And she's like, it's not a thing anymore. And I was like, oh,
you're too
that's
old.
Funny.
Or you're too young for it. You're too young to understand, Kat.
Yeah, thank God I have my parents to understand the Simpsons.
But yeah, like, I mean, from my knowledge, like, expos were kind of just like country pissing contests too. Whichever one had, like, you know, the nicest pavilion or, like, whichever one brought the most technology. I was actually talking about this in my history class the other day about, like, the World Expo of Paris in, like, 1900 or something. Mm-hmm. And how there was, like, pretty much, it was just, like, a technological, like, hub. And, like, people were just, like, freaking out about, like, new technologies and, like, how cool, like, you know, the United Kingdom was and, like, how advanced Germany was and stuff like that.
That sounds kind of fun, but I guess there's no way to have that without pissing contests.
Yeah.
Like, it would be so cool to be like, oh, this is what this country has been working on. This is the really cool, like, groundbreaking technology. But, of course, it's going to result in people trying to one-up each other.
Definitely. Well, it's all, like, again, it's like the Olympics was just, like, flexing, you know? But, like, literally this time where it's like, I can do more backflips than you can. Or at least, like, this person who was born in this country can.
Literal flexing.
That's what the new Olympic tagline should be. Country flexing.
I wonder if it's possible for countries to come together and celebrate something and not have people trying to one-up each other. I kind of don't think it's possible in this state. Maybe I'm pessimistic, but...
No, I don't know. I feel the same way. Maybe, yeah, I think I'm pessimistic about it, too. I mean, ideally, we could all, like, hold hands and just, like, hang out and, like, have, like, there should be, I'm going to coin it, there should be, like, a 4-year, was it biennial? No, that's 2 years, whatever. Anyway, biennial event where, honestly, just, like, people from different countries just hang out and, like, eat each other's food.
You know what we should do? We should have a big picnic.
Yeah, like, the world's picnic.
A big picnic potluck, and everybody brings good food, and it's just, like, it's so funny. I think, to me, the Olympics, like, every little thing is a competition. Like, the costumes, like, who cares? Yeah. But they put all this work in to have the best costume to represent their state. And I don't know. I mean, I guess it's fun to try to, like, perfect the performance, but it's such a performance.
I mean, I like, also, just to be on the other side of the coin, I could see, like, why people would really care. Like, because, I mean, for a lot of people that are, like, really into music or, like, are really into, like, you know, theater or whatever, like, I'm sure for someone who's, like, an athlete, like, really into sports, like, they would feel similarly about, like, oh, it's just, like, a performance. Like, all, you know, this play is just, like, people just, you know, doing stuff and saying things. Like, there's no kicks or, you know, flips or whatever. I'm just thinking of gymnastics. I love gymnastics.
I think... Full disclosure, I am definitely very, like, partial to sports in that I don't understand it. I don't get it. But I'm glad that we have Tintin here to rein me in.
Yeah, ball is life. As a personal tangent, I used to play basketball in high school, so I'm very much an expert in sports.
Wow. I used to play volleyball. I wasn't really that good, but I did it for a few years.
Wow. That's pretty good. If you can play, like, on a high school team, I would still consider you, like, a once athlete.
Wow.
Yeah.
I've retired my career since, but I don't know. Maybe I'll bring it back. I think we're going to cut to a song really quickly. We're going to cut to Prado's song PayPal right here on Double Space, CITR 101.9 FM.
We all know that the word jazz means many different things to many different people, so check out the real deal on The Jazz Show at CITR 101.9 FM or CITR.ca for live streaming. Yours truly, Gavin Walker, is your host, and I guarantee the straight goods of 3 hours of jazz at its finest. So come on by and give your ears a musical workout, 9 p.m. Mondays. Don't miss it.
Hello, and welcome back to Double Space on CITR 101.9.
FM, sorry.
And I'm Tintin.
Yeah. I'm Kat.
So, as we were discussing before the song and the break, about the Olympics. And
yeah, and patriotism.
We're going to keep it on topic to spaces. So, the 2018 Olympics, I'm just going to go on an Olympics tangent now.
Yeah, we love it.
Oh, thank you. are being hosted in Pyeongchang, South Korea, in 2018, beating out Munich and I think somewhere else in France, perhaps. Oh, yes. Annecy? Is that how you say it?
Yeah, sure.
Annecy? Sure. for the title of host of the 2018 Olympics. I think it's really interesting that a lot of the Olympics are being held, the future Olympics, I mean, are being held in East Asia, because the ones in 2020 are held in Tokyo. And what does that say about, you know, the, you know, development of East Asia presently? I guess it just means that they're, you know, they're ready to show off and really do that thing that we've been doing, you know, the West has been doing for quite some time already.
I wonder how they choose locations. I think I read some article about it, but I mean, it's such a huge event. It's like, how do you say, okay, this, like, this country and this town is allotted, like, millions of dollars to construct a new thing and also to get all this new tourism and just become like this suddenly hot and recognized city. Like, and how do you do that fairly?
I think like there's like a panel. I don't know why. I'm probably not right. Just full disclosure. But I think that different cities do different bids for it and like.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so it costs them money or something like that.
Excellent. Capitalism.
Yeah, capitalism. We love it.
The perfect way to run things.
Absolutely. But yeah, like, that's how they do it. So there's bids and then the Olympic, like, council, you know, selects a country. And then essentially, like, it costs that country that's selected, like, tons of money to, you know, build up the facilities. Like, maybe they do get subsidies. I don't know. They probably do. But if they don't, that's a lot of money. And then they just get, like, loads of tourists. So it probably makes up for it, kind of, maybe, in the end.
Part of me is, like, that's not fair to make it based on money. But then another part of me is, like, logistics. Like, yeah. I'm pretty sure the recent Brazil, do they have the...
Like, Rio de Janeiro?
Was it the winter or the summer one?
It was the summer. It was the Summer Olympics.
Yeah. Yeah. But I heard that they are like they're like in debt from it.
Yeah.
They didn't pay it off properly because they just didn't allot money properly.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of like, there's probably like a lot of corners that have to be cut when, you know, countries have to pay this much money to host an event that's pretty much just going to go over the course of 2 weeks and then really not be thought about again for like quite some time.
Yeah. I guess now that I'm thinking about it more, the tourism was kind of like iffy because then like Zika hit. Just right at that time, and everyone was like, psyched.
Yikes. Mm-hmm.
So I guess that was kind of a particular situation. But, I mean, the whole, like, monetary thing. But in a way, it's like a country won't be recognized in this huge, like, international way unless they have the right amount of money.
Yeah, well, I guess, like, the amount of money it costs to, you know, provide, like, facilities for the sports, like, for the events to even occur, and then, like, to lodge the athletes and stuff like that, like, it's tons of money. And then you have to, like, you know, do public, like, cleaning projects and, you know, all that good stuff. But, yeah. Have you ever been in a city during the Olympics?
No.
Wow. That's interesting. I was in London in 2012 Olympics, actually.
That must be so fun.
It was nice. I didn't see any of the events. Those were really expensive to see, but everyone was like super, super pleasant. Like,
I feel like even just being there, like there must be so much like energy and like electricity, and everyone's so excited.
Yeah, I definitely agree with like everyone's just like stoked, which is why like I don't know. I as much as I love to rag on the Olympics as I have been for the past like 20 minutes about like how they're it's just like flexing and like money and like all this crazy nationalist stuff, but like. At the end of the day, it's honestly just, like, a big party, and, like, people love it.
I mean, I think that's the positive effects of the Olympics and patriotism in general, is that people, I mean, feel close to one another, and they're happy about their country, and they get to celebrate with their country when they succeed, and it almost even doesn't matter, like, if you get one gold medal, your city can celebrate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like... I don't know. I think, like, some of the sweetest memories that I can remember, like, when I was in, like, junior high, weirdly, like, during the 2010 Olympics, it was just, like, seeing the, like, medal count and stuff. And, like, in class, I remember our teachers would, like, talk about it and, like, it would be brought up sometimes. It's just, like, a sweet, like, it's, like, heartwarming content sometimes when you think about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
CITR has always been your ultimate wingman for when you have the ladies back at your place or whatever.
It's Kat.
Hey, it's Tintin.
We're back. So we're talking about patriotism here on Double Space. And I wanted to bring it back to the kind of origin of patriotism I see. I mean, at least from what I've learned about. When I was learning Latin, I learned a lot about Roman culture in general, like ancient Roman culture.
Yeah, hit me with some Latin.
And... Puella est parva. The girl is small.
Oh, that's beautiful.
I know. A real romance language, for sure.
It's like the original romance language.
Original romance language, it's true. But the ancient Romans as a people were incredibly patriotic, like so patriotic. I found this little line from a Horace poem that I think really encapsulates it well. And it's Dulce et decorum est pro patria mori, which means it is sweet and proper to die for the fatherland.
Ooh.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, it was so ingrained in Roman culture to just that there's nothing higher than the fatherland. The fatherland is sacred. And of course, it's a fatherland, not a motherland.
Because we live in a patriarchy.
Yes, of course. And yeah, I mean, it's just that like going to war and dying for your country is the most noble thing. And I think that that is, I don't know. I mean, it's interesting that that's still totally a thing in like America. There's some people that really believe that going to the army and dying for the country is a good thing. I mean, there are probably a lot of people all over the world that believe that, but I mean, that regardless of whether you agree with it or not, it's a really heavy statement to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would assume that like back in, wow, the Roman times, it was probably much more, it was more common or like an everyday thing for folks to, you know, die to like, in order to like invade or protect their country or invade for and protect their country.
Yeah. There were a lot of, I mean, just a lot of barbarians is what the Romans would call them, which literally just means foreigners, mm-hmm. which just means anyone not Roman. And so, I don't know, everyone was trying to grow their empires because it was like, well, the only thing stopping us is other armies.
Yeah, and like if I can smite them with all my Roman power, why not?
Yeah, if you can expand the Roman Empire, why not?
Exactly. So I suppose now we know better about doing those kinds of things, but
honestly, I think it's just harder. I think that's the only thing.
Damn, Kat.
That's just me being like just piling on the pessimism.
Mm.
But yeah, I mean nowadays it's a little more, people are a little more connected globally, and like that sense of like invading is not seen as good.
Yeah, and like I guess now because we are so like we're such a globalized world, like there isn't as much of like an otherness, like what, you know, Romans might see in like even their neighbors, like, you know, from like the Ottoman Empire or whatever, like they'd be like, you're just so different from us, like we just don't have anything in common, like we're not the same. Whereas like now, you know, due to technological advances, you know, I'm sure I could find like tons of things that I have in common with someone who I've never met before in like, I don't know.
Yeah, anywhere.
Australia or something. I don't know.
Honestly. And I think that like with that, I mean, superpowers are so big nowadays and just have so much influence. And I think that the creation of like atomic weapons and stuff, like suddenly everyone is really tense and taking more land. Like I think a lot about like when Russia annexed Crimea, you know, the world was like, what are you doing? And the fact that they couldn't even grab it like they could have in ancient Roman times.
Mm-hmm.
They had to annex it, and they had to say it was just an annex. Obviously, it wasn't. We're all well aware. But they had to speak in this careful language, which mm-hmm. was definitely not the way it was in the ancient Roman times.
Yeah, definitely. And to, like, continue on kind of that discussion, I guess, like, what that made me think of was just decolonization in general. And, I mean, like, what the acts of, like, colonization in 2017 or, like, whatever the 21st century look like. I mean, the first thing it made me think of was, like, you know, the recent French election and, like, Marie Le Pen, who's saying that, like, colonization was a good thing and, like, it brought, you know, Algeria civilization and like it took it out of its like, you know, yeah is right. Mm-hmm. Stuff like that, you know, like you know, defendants of those kinds of actions, it just surprises me that people can think that way, or like that's even an idea that people might want to entertain.
that's another odd thing about modern patriotism, is that people are excluded despite the fact they live in the space. And suddenly you have to be a type of person in a type of space doing a type of thing to be part of the patriotism.
What do you mean?
I mean, you know, in America, there are certain racists that think that some people are not citizens when they very clearly are. And by the law, they are.
Certainly. Yeah.
And yeah. It's so frustrating because it's like you're saying that America's the greatest nation and because of freedom. And there's so many contradictory things in classic, like, America kind of thinking people is that, like, these are people, these are citizens, they deserve to be as free as you. And it turns out they're not as free as you. And there are a lot of people in America that don't feel free.
Definitely. Well, there's, like, lots of, you know, there's, like, thinly veiled, you know, racist, you know, exclusionary sentiments that come in, like, any country. You know, Canada, too. I mean, we're not much better than, you know, our friendly neighbors down south.
I feel like it's just less on the table.
Yeah, it's maybe, like, brought forward in a more tasteful way. It's a little less, like, reality TV than the United States is right now, if
yeah, we're like your, like, trashy, like, Jersey Shore cousin.
Yeah, but then we're over here, like, pretending that we're so much better when really we're just, like...
Countries that are all drama, let's be real.
Yeah.
Come on, countries.
This is a weird...
Sort your shit out.
I mean, we're just a little less upfront about it. Perhaps we are just, like, less intense because people care less about Canada than they do the United States in general.
Maybe that's it, but, like, why is that? I like Canada.
That's why you're here
that's
now.
That's why I'm here.
Yeah.
That's why I'm here.
Mm-hmm. We were talking about, like, how in America people often exclude different groups even though they are part of, like, a similar nationalist group. For example, like, I'm a Chinese immigrant. My parents were born in China. I moved here when I was 2 years old, and I would still identify as a Canadian. But I guess, like, sometimes the spaces aren't as inclusive towards individuals such as myself. I think that's where, like, the problem in patriotism and nationalism lies, is when it's exclusionary. And, like, people who do self-identify as, you know, Canadian or American or whatever other national or whatever other state, and they still feel excluded in their own homes.
I think that's the main difference between modern patriotism and ancient Roman patriotism, because ancient Roman patriotism was more like, you are my neighbor, there are people that could invade us. There are a number of people that can invade us from any which way, albeit land, sea, whatever. I need to know my neighbor so I know that if we're suddenly in battle, this person I can trust. Excuse me, I can trust.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what spawned it and what brought out these communities, was this need for safety and this need to recognize who you're behind. You know, if people are dying for their country, then whose country are you dying for, you know?
But what if, you know, you can't trust the people in your own country? That's, I feel like, what people are now afraid of because of, like, globalization and stuff.
That is definitely a modern query, and we're going to be talking about that upcoming in after this little break on Double Space, CITR 101.9 FM.
I'll be your wingman. Even if it means me taking a chubby, I will suck it up.
Attention, perverts. Live musical accompaniment and raw sexual energy from Vancouver indie bands Ones and Zeros, Reef Shark, and Cat Blanc. Thursday, April 16th at the Hindenburg Gasthaus. Doors open at 8 p.m. For advance tickets and more information, please go to ticketfly.com.
Hello and welcome back to Double Space. This is Tintin.
And I'm Kat.
And we are continuing our discussion on nationalism, patriotism, and the spaces that we occupy. Double Space.
Double Space. To us. Space. Double Space.
Love it. what were we talking about, Kat? You had something you wanted to say?
I mean, to recap, we talked about the Olympics and, you know, ancient Rome is what we've been talking about mainly.
Mm-hmm.
And we got to the idea of what happens when your country doesn't protect you.
Ah, the age-old question.
Yeah.
Yeah, and how before in, you know, ancient times, older times, folks would use the idea of, like, countries and, like, nation-states and stuff to determine who was on, you know, your side if, you know, bad stuff went down and you need to protect yourself. But yeah, like, I guess what I'm saying is, like, the root of a lot of fear now is the fact that, like, you know, living in this globalized world, there's less certainty as to, like, who is and isn't on, you know, your side.
Yeah.
And of course there's economic incentives to also be exclusionary as well, but that's besides the point. We're gonna ignore that one.
I feel like another part of it is, like, because of the internet, there's suddenly so many communities. I think that is what's causing the main difference between modern patriotism and ancient patriotism, is that because of the internet, there's suddenly so many communities you can be a part of. You're not just part of a community because of the space that you're in. You're in a community because you think about things very abstractly and similarly to certain people.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I guess, like, I mean, now this show is turning into, like, globalization. Is it bad? Is it good? Who knows? But
we're the ones to talk about.
We're the ones. We're the authorities on globalization.
Hell yeah. That's our real tagline.
Yep, there it is. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. My life has been made insurmountably, I would say, better. The fact that I moved to Canada, I would definitely say that without a doubt. And I'm grateful every day for my parents to have done it. But I suppose, like, the process has involved a lot of, like, identity things. And, like, I think that's something that we don't talk about enough as, like, you know, people, children of immigrants or immigrants themselves, like, the divide between identity and, like, not being quite enough of one nation or, like, ethnic group, or, like, not just fitting in because you're not exactly, like, what is seen as, like, the clear cut, like, yes, this is what a Canadian person looks like. I wish that there was more work done into making that less of a issue for young immigrants, children of immigrants, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, people in the diaspora.
Yeah, diaspora talks.
Yeah. And I feel like it must be more, I mean, in this day and age where there's so many abilities to move places, suddenly, I mean, there must be more people that feel that way too and are also living in that diaspora.
Definitely. Well, like, expats, immigrants, all that kind of stuff. It's tough.
Yeah.
I'm sure my immigrant homies can back me up on this one.
So, do you feel Canadian? Or does it feel kind of not fitting to say?
I think I'm Canadian. I'm Canadian in my visa, or my passport. I'm Canadian mm-hmm. in the way that I speak. I'm Canadian in the way that I dress. I'm Canadian in the way that I adopt a mindset that is similar to most folks in Canada. But that being said, there's definitely, like, a part of me that acknowledges that as much as I want to be, like, a full-fledged Canadian, and, like, I don't identify with a lot of not the values per se, but I just don't feel like sometimes there's a place for me here. And then there's also not a place for me in China either. It's like living in two different worlds.
I'm curious about what you mean by place.
Oh, well, I mean, it's just like the idea of, like, I can continue to live in Canada. Like, I think that's awesome. That's great. Like, I would love to do that. But I can live in China. I don't know the space that well, but people there look like me, for example. Like, a lot of folks there mm-hmm. look like me. And I feel like in every country that I can, like, think of, there's really, like, a bit of, like, a white superiority kind of, like, mindset. Like, and in China, that is the way, too. Like, people, like, purchase skin lightening creams. I'm sure you've heard of that kind of thing before. Yeah, that kind of stuff. But, yeah, there just doesn't seem to be, like, a space in, like, the Canadian, you know, fabric that I necessarily feel like I'm quite right in, because I don't know, there's like a bit of a disconnect between immigrants and, you know, settlers, or I mean, I'm a settler too, but like, you know, folks who can say that they're like Canadian, you know, born 100% Canadian, you know?
Yeah.
And that's a whole other discussion, because really, who can say that they're 100% Canadian besides the, you know, Indigenous folks that have really been here?
And even then, they might not necessarily identify as Canadian.
Yeah, and that's the crazy thing.
What does it even mean?
Yeah, what does it mean to be Canadian? Because, because Canada, even the concept of Canada is such a purely European thing. The concept of, like, continents, too, and, like, the concept of just years, even. The way that we measure time is also a European export.
Whoa.
Damn, I'm fired up.
Whoa.
Yeah. It's weird.
But, yeah, I mean, the idea of a country being more than just land, but being adjectives.
Yeah.
And creating imagery. I mean, that's where it starts to go beyond itself, I think.
Certainly. Cultures and spaces and, you know, it's just when a country kind of steps outside of itself and you can associate different things with different countries. I find that's an interesting time as well.
Yeah, definitely. We'll get into that a little more in a bit. Right now we have Feist with her new song, Pleasure, on CITR 101.9 FM.
It's my pleasure in your pleasure. same. That's what we're here for.
In June 2013, Indigenous peoples from around the globe met in Alta, Norway to create a global platform to carry forth to the 2014 Special Session of the General Assembly, focusing on rights of Indigenous peoples. Adopted by consensus, the Alta Outcome document outlines a global platform of issues with solutions. As Indigenous peoples and First Nations, although we may live within the current laws of the land, as Native peoples, we also have our own laws, spirituality, worldview, lifestyles, and ways of knowing that form our foundation. We have the right to live according to our own principles and beliefs. This is called self-determination. We also have the right to sovereignty over our lands and territories, and over our resources such as air, ice, oceans, waters, mountains, and forests. These rights are recognized under international law. In addition, governments have a responsibility to protect, preserve, and restore our sacred sites and cultural landscapes. We will work together until these rights and responsibilities are realized and applied. For more information, visit WCIP2014.org.
Welcome back to Double Space. This is Tintin.
And I'm Kat.
Hello.
Hey.
We're continuing our discussion on nationalism and countries. So far we have covered the Olympics, Roman history, very brief, very specific Roman history, if I might add. And now we're going to talk about what it means to be, you know, from a certain country.
Yeah, part of a country, what a country means.
Yeah.
Beyond just space.
Mm-hmm. Kat, I pose the question to you. What does it mean to be an American? Preamble, Kat is from America. She is from California.
Wow. That is such a big question. And let me tell you, when I first hear that, my immediate instinct association is hot dogs.
You're kidding.
I'm not kidding. Hot dogs on a bun with some double lines of ketchup and mustard on a warm summer day, green grass, dad's grilling, mom looking fresh as ever is serving the kids. I mean, really 1950s, just like classic ads. That's what comes to mind.
Very wholesome.
And I think that's what comes to mind for a lot of people, because that's the image that has been so finely crafted.
Mm-hmm, for the American dream.
Yeah.
Do you think that's still a thing? Do you think the American dream is still a relevant
idea? The
American
dream. I think that it exists as, I don't know, people entering a superpower. People that are not from a huge conglomerate of a country, coming to a huge conglomerate of a country and suddenly finding themselves part of it and hopefully having more chances and opportunities than they did in their maybe smaller country. I think that some people probably still feel that way, but I just don't know if it's so true. I was reading this article, this classic listicle article that said like 28 things millennials are killing.
Dope.
And supposedly, we're killing the American dream, if you would count Tintin and I as millennials.
Yeah, I would count myself as a millennial.
I think I would too, like just on the cusp.
Of between what and what, though?
I don't know, between millennial and whatever the younger generation is. Or maybe we are part of that.
Maybe.
Everyone hates millennials, so I kind of like to not associate as a millennial.
I mean, I think there's like a certain thing with just like owning it too.
Yeah, true.
Owning being a millennial.
There's some swag.
Throw some swag on that, dude.
Yeah, just hating everything except avocado toast.
Oh, God, that gives me anxiety.
But Tintin, so now I must ask you.
Oh, yes.
What does Canadian mean to you?
To be Canadian, I suppose, oh, man, it's so convoluted and so complicated, especially asking someone that wasn't born here and having to adopt what I believe to be Canadian. It's really a fine balance between, like, understanding, like, my immediate associations with like Canadian is, like, not, you know, as clear-cut as yours seems to be, because I do think of Canada as more of, like, a mosaic, as I was taught in, you know, grade six, like, social studies, that Canada is, like, a mosaic country where, like, everyone's inputs are, make up this big, whole, beautiful thing, where it's not so much,
that
like, the melting
pot. That is so beautiful.
Thank you.
As an abstract, like in terms of like propagandized ideas of what a country is.
Definitely.
I think that's beautiful.
I think it's preferable to the melting pot idea of America.
Yeah, I was just thinking that. I guess I was also taught, I mean, my image of America was coming from, you know, social studies, which is just where they try to drill in, of course, that idea of what it means to be American. And there was the idea of the melting pot, but that just has felt so contradictory. Like, it isn't even on my mind anymore just because it doesn't feel true. It doesn't feel right.
Yeah, definitely. Well, like, I mean, the mosaic thing, as I was saying, it's like, I guess it's accurate because I feel like in Canada, there's generally like quite a bit of respect for people's different cultural backgrounds, at least from my past lived experience. I grew up in a couple of communities in Calgary where I'm from, but most of them are generally like respectful of different people's cultural backgrounds and like let people celebrate, you know, do their thing and like have, you know, spaces for different celebrations for different, you know, ethnicities and races and stuff.
That's really nice. And I think that's the idealized, like if you had to describe a country, like that's perfect. Whereas like my image of my home country is like a JCPenney ad. Because part of me is like, yeah, I'm thinking of that like seemingly like so nice picture, but also like the hot dog is from a factory farm and the grass is like fed with chemicals to make it unearthly green.
Mm-hmm.
And the wife is not happy and the husband is not happy. It's these subtexts. I mean, I am mainly just trying to like gain some ground after that like classic America PSA I dropped a little earlier. But yeah, that subtext of people not being happy is what I think of.
Wow. That's not what I think of when I think of America as an outsider.
What do you think of America as?
I have family that live in America and they really, really love it. Like they definitely went there for, you know, the American dream purpose. Like they moved there because there were way more opportunities than there ever have been there for, you know, folks in their hometown in the past.
Did they get their American dream?
I guess, like, everyone gets a version of their American dream.
Yeah.
No one gets, like, the exact... I mean, how many people do you know that actually have, like, a white picket fence, a dog, and two kids, and, like, their kids are beautiful, and their wife is, like, you know, this blonde, kind woman?
I actually know more than I would care to, than I wish I did.
Oh, really? Well, I mean, you know, as two... Like, for my family, for example, like, as two Chinese immigrants, that's not really what it's going to look like at all. But I think, you know, the American dream isn't a dead idea. It's just a changing idea.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I think it's just general gaining success and just being a content and well-fed and just well-cared-for person.
Yeah.
In this new, like, coming to a whole new country and then being happy in it.
I think, like, the idea of the American dream is less about, like, in my interpretation, sorry, is less about, like, the success that you acquire with it. It's more about, like, having the freedom to choose.
Yeah.
Which is what I think America brands itself on.
Yeah, freedom. That's a big thing. But it's such a word that can be used for any agenda.
Definitely. Well, like, the word, yeah, and the word freedom, even, like, the life, liberty, and justice for all, whatever, has been, like, propaganda-sized. Is that even a word? into, you know, different things that mean different things for different people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For some people, it means I have the freedom to make this person feel terrible.
Yeah, and I have the freedom to choose what I want to do with my body.
Yeah.
For some folks.
And some people say I have the freedom to try to stop that.
Yeah. So.
And it's tricky because how do you say what's right? And I don't feel like I can say what's right, but I know that I have my opinions. That's for sure.
Yes. Should we keep them to ourselves?
Maybe on this specific thing. Okay. We have to wrap it up anyway, as it's already been a nice, lovely hour. And I love speaking to you, Tintin.
I love talking to you too, Kat.
Oh. This is Devil Space on CITR 101.9 FM.
Thank you for listening.
Yeah. See ya.